Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 121.
This week on the podcast, rest in peace, Robin Williams. Your death is at least bringing attention to the dangers of mental illness, which is something that even repeated tragic school shootings couldn't.
Ferguson, Missouri is just the latest in a series of war-torn regions that the American military, i.e. a municipal police force, is having to save by a ruthless military intervention.
Rick Perry really doesn't like hilarious drunk people and is obviously no fun.
Nouri al-Maliki is so over it and finally realizes that fixing Iraq will require someone with a desire to actually do so.
Do not even think about nominating us for the Ice Bucket Challenge. We mean it.
And as if the fear of your flight just disappearing into thin air isn't enough, we now have proof that armless pilots are captaining planes.
So fasten your seatbelts, we'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And that's where you should go.
Do it.
Once you've done that, find us on Twitter, find us on Facebook. We're like updating stuff these days because like a lot of random shit's going on.
Yeah.
So we're not
good.
We're not kidding around this time.
Mm-hmm.
We did not comment on our Facebook page on Robin Williams' death.
Well, all of the rest
everyone else had done it, had it covered for us.
So
literally,
sort of
by
like
the time I
things.
Found out, my entire Facebook news feed was covered with it already, and I was like, "How did you guys find out so quickly?" Like,
I know.
I'm like on like Hollywood Reporter's like breaking news email list somehow at work, and still didn't find out until after everyone else knew.
Yeah.
I'm the last person to find out everything. Makes me doubt Hollywood Reporter's chops as a reporting organization. But beyond that, it was a really tragic
death. Committed suicide.
He committed suicide.
We know. He was only 63, and he's had like a sort of, you know, lifelong battle with addiction and depression.
Yeah.
And
he'd recently been diagnosed with Parkinson's as well, which also not only is a depressing thing to find out, but also I think tends to make you depressed as well,
because
it's a neurological disorder,
right.
And so it has it one of its side effects is often depression as well. So in any case, rest in peace, Robin Williams. It got a lot of people on the internet talking about mental illness and why, and the fact that we have like very few options for people with mental illness. I mean, this is sort of a stark version of it, I think, because obviously Robin Williams was not someone who didn't have resources to treat mental illness, but we just don't have like a sort of like good sort of support system set up here for identifying when people have mental illness that, you know, could become problematic more so than just being a horrible experience.
Well, I think it also highlights how terrible mental illnesses really can be, because I mean, he had struggled with addiction, which granted is a mental illness, but I mean, that was really sort of, you wouldn't think of him as someone, you know, I mean,
you don't think of him as someone who needed to struggle with anything,
right?
Because he was a hugely successful actor and like a sort of icon of comedy.
Yeah.
So that it's comedians though.
I know that's been another reason.
And actually,
that, like, people have talked a lot about that. This
about
week as well,
sort of about the, there's like a big issue with suicide in the comedy community. I remember, you know, one of my former bosses committed suicide. Another sort of equally surprising and very tragic death. And a lot of people's reactions were sort of like, not another one.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, is this a thing that we're all
actually,
looking forward to here? Like,
a,
we're just going to have to deal with this again and again?
I heard a story on KPCC, our local LA, you know, one of our local LA NPR affiliates, and they had a story from the Comedy Store here in LA. And the owner of the Comedy Store years ago started having a couple nights a week an on-staff psychologist.
I'm not
that
surprised.
That their comedians can meet with if they want to, like in the evenings, like basically like either before or after they do a set.
Yeah.
Because he just sort of like got fed up after, you know, a certain number of people who he felt he was friends with, you know, as the owner of the Comedy Store had committed suicide, which is tragic.
It's tragic.
I mean, so anyway.
It's a dangerous line of work.
It's always good to be talking about these issues. It always sucks that it has to be something like this. That
it doesn't ever seem to be
it.
Something like repeated school shootings
no,
that bring this up.
No.
A lot of people talking about mental illness who didn't once mention it when we were watching poor children in school get slaughtered by crazy people.
Yeah, very true.
I guess
it's
easier to sort of sympathize with someone that we like having mental illness than someone that we don't like, even if the guy that we don't like is like causing damage to people we don't know. But it's sort of like a depressing thing that
it really is.
That we can only wrap our minds around this when a beloved comedy figure passes away and not like 20 children in a school somewhere. In any case, the real news of the week is this shit that's going down in Ferguson.
Yeah, Ferguson, as people are
calling
it.
Ferguson, as people are...
Because it's looks like a war-torn country.
Yeah, it was like there. Martial law has basically been declared over there. It's basically a war-torn nation at this point.
So, I think everybody pretty much generally knows what's going on, but just quick backstory.
It's worth reviewing.
It is. So last Saturday, Michael Brown, who was an 18-year-old, was shot in Ferguson, Missouri. He was an African-American, and he was shot by a white police officer in Ferguson, which is one of the suburbs of St. Louis.
Right.
There were sort of conflicting reports about whether he was armed, whether he was resisting arrest at the time, and I think that most people now are sort of pretty much, I think, generally agreed that he was not armed, or at least was not shooting anyway. Like, all of the shells at the scene were, like, from the police officer's gun.
Yeah.
He was shot multiple times, too, and I think first initially fired on from the car, and then fired on again.
Yeah.
So, obviously, that caused, like, a huge
situation. This is the kind of thing that if the police had been using their brains, they know tends to cause protests.
Yeah.
Shooting unarmed teenagers is always a sort of sore spot with people.
So it was really there, while there have obviously, like, that brought out, like, an initial sort of, like, gut reaction in a community that's almost 70% African American.
Well, and Ferguson has been, and is sort of, the demographics have been changing. So the police force is almost entirely white there.
Right.
And the community is almost entirely African American. And there have been already issues with police sort of unfairly targeting people in the African American community with traffic stops and things like that.
So they started holding protests. But it was really sort of the local police's handling of sort of the initial protest and the aftermath of this. You know, they didn't release the name of the officer who shot Michael Brown. They didn't, no arrests were made. And so the community was sort of like left. There was basically like a vacuum of information.
Right.
They were really sort of like locking out the press. So there was really no good way for, it was just sort of like an unrest on top of anger. It was just sort of like,
no one knew anything.
So it was like, and then as soon as these protests started happening, you know,
martial law was basically declared.
Yeah. They, all of the sort of like, you know, military gear that these, you know, the local police forces have now, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, came out. You know, people were getting tear gassed during these protests. There were, you know, armored vehicles and stuff.
There were
driven around.
There were sound cannons, which, like, we don't need sound cannons. Right. St. Louis does not need a sound cannon.
Right.
Like, sorry about it.
And, of course, the pictures coming out of there were what was really shocking.
Well, because, and they, like, were not being sort of responsible about how the press was treated in this situation either. And that really stoked a lot of the flames, because we were hearing initially about the story and it was like, oh, another African-American teenager was shot. He was unarmed. Like, these are stories we're hearing too much
already. Right, exactly.
So it was sort of easy at first to be like, God, another one of these?
Another one of these, yeah.
But then we started seeing these pictures of, like, tear gassing, pictures of, you know, of press being arrested themselves, and reports of the press being mistreated by the police the way that Which is how we got to Ferguson.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had an Al Jazeera crew that got tear gas fired at them.
Yep. Huffington Post reporters were
getting roughed up, were getting arrested, and HuffPo took the story and ran with it,
because
they were not about to be fucked with this this way.
No, not at all.
So there were multiple accounts of reporters being roughed up by the police and being stuck in these very dangerous situations. The protests started getting a lot more violent because the police response got so violent. And, you know, and we're going to talk a little bit what sort of a militarized police force does to the people that they're sort of coming out, that they're charged with protecting, but they seem to be attacking.
Yeah.
And so it got to the point where Obama had to deliver a statement about it, which he did on Friday.
Yes. And by Friday, it had sort of been quelled a little bit, because it was on Thursday, actually, that the state highway, Jay Nixon, the governor of the state, put the state highway patrol
in
charge.
They're a little bit more of a professional police force.
As opposed to the St. Louis County Police, which was sort of where all of the issues were taking place anyway. So the state highway patrol took over. The guy who came in and took over, you know, had been in the state highway patrol for like almost 30 years or something. He was an African-American. He told the police force to sort of like put away all their military gear. He walked with the protesters. He said, we all have to heal collectively, et cetera, et cetera. So there was like a brief sort of respite from all of the protesting and like craziness.
There was even a nice picture of him leading the protesters, and people were putting that all over social media, saying this is the most important picture to come out of Ferguson, and blah blah blah.
And also Friday, they finally released the name of the officer who shot him. So we were sort of like felt like we were sort of starting to get
getting somewhere.
Then the local police department, who's the one who's sort of been causing all the shenanigans anyway, went and released photos and a video of Michael Brown robbing a convenience store.
Unrelated to this incident. P.S. Right.
Because they also admitted at the same time that the officer who shot him did not know that he was a suspect in a robbery. And also, lest we forget, being a suspect in a robbery does not mean that you get gunned down on the street.
No.
Like, you go to trial.
We don't kill people.
You may get arrested. You get arrested.
Sure. We don't kill people for robbing convenience stores in this country. That's not what we do here.
No, it's not. So people got re-pissed off. Rightfully so, because they felt like it was, you know, just an attempt by the local police department to drag his name through the mud. And I saw it. I have family who lives in St. Louis, and I saw someone post something like, "Oh, we shouldn't judge the police before all the information is revealed because he was a robber." You know, like all the people who were idiots and racists, like immediately jumped onto the story. It's like, "Oh, he deserved." No, he didn't.
There was a lot of discussion. There were a lot of stories being published about the different ways in which we cover these stories when the victim is African American too, because a lot of the time you see like some like hooded dark picture of some teenager who's African American, and then the white suspect will be like their class photo, or like always happening. And so there were a lot of stories I noticed this week about this sort of because of this choice to release unrelated footage of him robbing a convenience store that had nothing to do with this case.
Right.
And it's just sort of like, what are we just supposed to be like, oh, well, at least he was a bad guy. Like, that's not, no, robbing that's a convenience not store is not what constitutes you being like a
gunned
menace to society enough to be gunned. Like, that's not a thing.
No.
But so I was interested to see that discussion happening as well, because that is always something that's a little bit annoying about these cases is like, you know, you see, like, Trayvon Martin is, like, hooded in some, like, you know, gangster pose in all the pictures that, like, where was his class photo?
Yeah.
He took a class photo, too, I'm sure.
He would have had
like,
to.
Everyone else.
He was in school sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, George Zimmerman is always, like, in a suit in those pictures, and, like, then we have, like, Trayvon Martin in a hoodie.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
Yeah. Which, as Geraldo Rivera
don't let your kids wear hoodies.
told all of us, you're not supposed to be wearing.
Right.
But anyway, so that obviously got everyone pissed off. It was sort of widely panned that they did that. Jay Nixon, again, the governor, sort of was really angered about that. I saw him on Meet the Press this morning and sort of reiterated
his anger. The DOJ had asked them not to release
that. Yeah, they told
them
not to
do that.
They were like, don't
do that.
Like, this is not what you do. So then there was, like, more unrest, and then local officials contacted Jay Nixon and told him to put a curfew in place. And, of course, that just pissed everyone off.
Nobody likes the curfew.
Further, and so then curfew was broken, and then there were more shenanigans last night. Saturday night was the first night of the curfew. A bunch of people broke it. Somebody was shot, not by a police officer, but there was just sort of like more...
It was just like unrest. You
know, craziness going on. Yeah.
Curfews, as we've often shown in war-torn nations, often don't work that well.
No.
And are essentially in this sort of situation where it's the protesters that really have the right to feel like they've been mistreated.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's not for law and order. They're not looting over there. It's not that kind of protest. I mean, there has been some looting.
But that's not what
this has been about. This is not that kind of unrest.
No.
This was sort of created by this sort of militaristic police presence.
Right, exactly.
And it could have been quelled by that stopping.
Yeah.
And by them not antagonizing the protesters further.
Yeah.
Not by a curfew, which just makes it seem like the protesters are the suspects.
Yeah, exactly. So today, Eric Holder ordered a federal autopsy to be done. I think they'd already done one locally, but I think that they're probably trying to figure out like how many times he was shot, at what range he was shot. I think these,
like,
are all sort
how
of like
they, how much of a threat he could have possibly seemed to the officer at the time.
Important things to know as to, you know, to figure this out. So, you know, people are an arrest hasn't been made. Which I think is another thing that people are rightly pissed off about, because
we
like,
know who shot
people,
him.
We know, I mean, he killed him, and so we don't know all of the circumstances. But when someone, you know, kills someone, you usually decide to arrest them, and then they go on trial for whether it was
whether it was a justified situation or not.
Yeah. So anyway, as we mentioned earlier, this sort of really just brought to a head like a lot of the issues that have sort of like been happening.
In St. Louis, in
that region, it's highly segregated there. And even since 2000, the demographics have changed a ton. And there are 3 African Americans on the police force in Ferguson out of 53 police officers. So there's no representation.
And this is a community that's 70% African American.
Right, and, you know, the state attorney general had issued an annual report that the Ferguson police were twice as likely to arrest African Americans during traffic stops. The state NAACP has filed complaints against this police department. And, you know, there's no African Americans in local government there. There's only one on the city council. There's none on the school board. So this is sort of, you know, a prime example of, like, you know, what can happen when, you know,
when people aren't represented, when people are misrepresented. Our local government.
So, and I think the scary thing about this is that there are so many places in America that are becoming more and more like this, and it's oftentimes due to not necessarily race. I think it's oftentimes due to economics, you know, and that.
But that's how we end up here. That's a racial issue,
of course,
you know, right, in and of itself. And I mean, this is something also that I think this is every city is segregated to some extent. I think the way that urban demographics have been changing have sort of created a sort of bigger problem here, because what has happened is that low-income people have been driven into the suburbs. And so they're sort of in these isolated communities where the entire city government is sort of, like, isolated from the, you know, is sort of like, it's the city government of the larger city, and they're kind of, like, geographically isolated in a way that they would not be in a city that was not, you know, a car city, that was not a city where low-income people are being driven out of the center. Because, you know, young white people have been sort of recolonizing urban centers all over America. That's happening here. That's been happening everywhere. You know, this is a big issue in New York, because low-income people in New York can't afford to be in one of the 5 boroughs anymore. Like, so this is sort of like an example of a trend that I think is going to sort of be problematic in a lot of places.
I think it is. You know? I mean, you know, obviously, hopefully we don't have a bunch of, you know, racially motivated shootings like this.
No,
which
one hopes
think.
Not.
But I mean, like, you know, these issues of, you know, clashing of, you know, either classes or races, I think is
it's what happens when you have huge economic disparities in a nation that has a lot of wealth.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Because that's welcome to Brazil, guys. Here we are.
Yeah.
We live in Brazil now.
Yeah,
apparently.
This is why one of the reasons why income inequality is such a huge
reasons that it's a problem for rich people too.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Because riots are not good for rich people either.
No, nobody likes
nobody
this.
Likes a riot.
No.
You know?
If you're rich in Ferguson, this is a real buzzkill.
It's a real buzzkill. there is one group of people that like these riots, and it's police forces that have too many toys to play with and should not be.
Oh my God, they're loving it.
Not be getting to use them.
They got to pull out all of their toys.
They finally
that they
got to use the sound cannon.
They got for free from the federal government.
Yeah. There's been sort of an increasing trend with local governments. It started with the drug war, but it really kicked into gear after 9/11. There was a lot of anti-terrorism funding that was being funneled to local governments who were buying these, like, fancy anti-terrorism toys because, you know, St. Louis, the big terrorist target that is St. Louis. You never know.
Yeah.
But a lot, you know, a lot of local governments in smaller cities have sort of like there was sort of an extra paranoid effect in a lot of those places.
Yes.
And so places that if not on the minds of anyone outside of America at all,
no, exactly.
have been acquiring these, like, crazy toys to play with.
Yeah, exactly. It's all part of this DOD thing called the Excess Property Program. And
right.
It's called, known as the 1033 program. And, like,
local lingo.
It's basically where they just give away
counterterrorism
that
are, like, excess supplies that the military has.
Right.
But these people aren't trained to use those supplies. I mean, this is local government. These local police forces.
Yeah.
They're there to protect the people that live in those places, not to invade.
Right.
Like,
well, and I think that, you know, obviously we need to have it's an important debate to have about whether these, you know,
whether they should have these resources at local government
or not. And I think that, I mean, I would say that they shouldn't. But I mean, like, whether you want to sort of, like, talk about, you know, the broader scope of sort of anti-terrorism, whatever, like, all of that is nonsense. But, like, this is not, you have to be judicious in how you're using these things, because this is not anti-terrorism. They are using them on their own citizens,
exactly,
and that is obviously not the point of this program.
Which is funny, because these things were all purchased, you know, in this sort of, like, crazy conservative you know, anti-terrorism haze that we were in.
Right.
These are the people that think the government is going to destroy them. So they wanted to make sure that the police and military had all of these crazy things that are now being turned against them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what
Bill Maher said too, because he about a month ago did a segment and he did a new rules on this.
Oh, you told me to watch that and I never did.
That's all right. But I mean, like, you know, well, and I mentioned to you what he said. He was like, you know, conservatives for years have been sort of like, you know, fearful in a sort of like conspiracy theory sort of way that, you know, these jackbooted armed thugs were like going to come in and like take away our rights. I think they were more worried about that people were going to take away their guns. But like this police force,
this is what happened.
Here, these are the jackbooted thugs that you should be worried
about.
We armed them.
In the name of getting rid of Muslims, basically.
Right.
Like in the name of some weird racist issue that we had with terrorism, you know, and Muslims.
Yeah.
We armed our police to basically turn on their own citizens.
On citizens, yeah.
Well, and this is the thing is, so what happens in these situations, I am a seasoned protester myself, so I can tell you what happens in these situations. I've been to protests where the police were no problem at all and everything stayed peaceful, and I've been in protests where things got a little scary. And oftentimes things turn scary in a protest because people get scared, and the people get scared because the police get scared, and everyone is suddenly scared. And so everyone sort of, it's a very dehumanizing thing because suddenly you see these guys in their riot gear and their helmets on and their batons out, and you're like, well, those guys aren't here to help me and protect me.
Right.
So I'm under attack.
Yeah.
And so you act like you're under attack, and that's how things get violent. Yeah. This was something, you know, we had this discussion a lot under Giuliani in New York because he sort of like presided over a very sort of like martial law style police force where they would go into protests and basically like, you know, shit would get scary because the police would get out of hand. And then there was another moment where I also thought related to this where after 9/11, we had all of these National Guardsmen from upstate New York with machine guns, like, sitting in the subway. These were kids that had not been to New York City. And they suddenly were in the middle of the subway, which, if you've not been to New York City, is a sort of alarming place to be.
Right.
And they're there with machine guns. And I was like, it's going to take one, you know, kind of creepy guy in walking around the subway that the rest of us would just ignore to, like, panic one of these 19-year-olds, and they're going to have a machine gun all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know? Like, so the police having this sort of military presence does something to you sort of on a psychological level because it makes you feel threatened.
Right.
It doesn't make you feel safer.
Right.
So well, that's what a lot of people have been discussing happened
to you. It also gives them the sort of, you know, it makes them feel like they have carte blanche to sort of, you know, use these things.
Well, that's
you know,
what there was a New York Magazine Science of Us blog post about this where they basically referenced the saying, when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Right.
And that's basically what happens to the police, is there's a sort of dehumanizing effect on them as well, because they're suddenly, like, charged with, you know, what do you do when you have that kind of equipment? What is it for? It's not there just so you can sit quietly and enjoy your sound cannon, you know, like, what it's there for is to sort of, like, use against a threat. And once someone has given you license to use it, you sort of assume that there's a threat. Like, you have kind of no choice but to make that kind of assumption, because why else are you standing around in riot gear with a sound cannon and rubber bullets? Some poor choices getting made in St. Louis.
So many
poor choices getting made.
But outside of this story,
it is interesting. Actually, I was listening to, I think it was the ex-mayor of Seattle talk about this, and it was somebody who had been in charge of the response to those WTO protests that got out of hand in Seattle like years ago.
Yeah.
And he was basically like, you know, if I knew now what I knew then, or if I knew then what I knew now, I would never have sent the police out the way that I did, because we were definitely part of the problem there. Mm-hmm. We created this unsafe environment where people felt threatened and they got out of hand.
Yeah.
And it was especially problematic because it was like a bunch of teenagers basically that didn't know what was, you know, didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So he said that he had learned in the intervening years that that is not an effective way to control a crowd. And he was sort of alarmed that the St. Louis police were not able to use that lesson in any way.
Yeah.
They seem to be new to this situation.
Yeah. Well,
Brent's continuing love affair with Rand Paul is...
don't say it like that.
I know.
No, but it
I
is.
Mean it like...
I mean, He's... You can say it like that. Fuck it. I don't care. It's happening.
It's happening. It's
what
happening.
Do you want? What do you want from me?
Rand Paul...
Stop judging me.
Rand Paul is saying some things that even people on the left are failing to say, which is sort of concerning, because this is a man who was sort of railing on against the Civil Rights Act for a while in his early in his career.
Well, that's the other thing.
And that's coming back up.
I was glad that people got around to that because I even myself had forgotten about that, like in my sort of just like...
Right, well, he was saying all the right things for so long, you couldn't know.
In my fairy tale world with Rand Paul, is that I forgot that he was against the 1964, Civil Rights Act. But he is sort of like the one who is out there right now. He's talking about racial issues. He's talking about, you know...
Militarization of the police force.
Right, he's talking about... unfair sentences for African Americans versus, versus whites. And he wrote an op-ed on this that was in Time and just really hit it all on the nose.
Yeah,
just got everything right yet again.
It's really creepy.
It's upsetting, actually.
I don't like where this is heading.
I don't like it either. You know, but he said, he just sort of made the point that there, which we just sort of talked about, but that there needs to be a huge difference between a police response and a military response. Yeah. So even if you have these things, it's like you don't use them against
your own people.
Like that's not, that's crazy.
You have them, if you have them to fight terrorism, this is not terrorism.
Yeah.
Protests are not terrorism.
Right, exactly. And so he was, a couple quotes that I thought were good anyway, but he said, when you couple this militarization of law enforcement with an erosion of civil liberties and due process that allows the police to become judge and jury, national security letters, no-knock searches, broad general warrants, pre-conviction forfeiture, we're going to have a very serious problem on our hands, which is...
We do now.
Correct. That's it. You got it. And he also sort of, talked at length about racial disparities. He said, given the racial disparities in our criminal justice system, it's impossible for African Americans not to feel like their government is particularly targeting them, which is, again, I think what led to sort of some of this, like, huge, unrest.
Well, the community here was treated so disrespectfully in terms, like, especially with the lack of information being provided and stuff like that. Like that is the that is what you would gather from that response.
Yeah. And I think most importantly, and also most importantly, coming from a Republican, like, and I think that that's what everybody else is missing here. I mean, the left sort of like does say things like this.
Right.
We say things like this all the time. And it's the right that sort of has never, they're always the ones who want to sort of, it's the right who would have released that footage of him.
Yes.
Robbing the convenience store. You know,
exactly.
Like, it just.
Well, and it's the right that is often trying to deny that these issues exist,
right,
using very suspect arguments that don't really acknowledge the reality. You know, they don't.
Exactly.
They don't separate sort of reality from like process.
Well, and that's exactly what he called out. He called out people who sort of like are not living in reality. And he said, anyone who thinks that race does not still, even if inadvertently, skew the application of criminal justice in this country is just not paying close enough attention. Our prisons are full of black and brown men and women who are serving inappropriately long and harsh sentences for nonviolent mistakes in their youth. And he's actually working on this. He's got a bill, I think with a Democrat, actually, too, to, try and get
rid
of some of these
nonviolent, drug offenders from going to jail for like a million years.
Yeah.
But so yeah, it was interesting that this was, we finally got someone to be like, remember when this guy was terrible?
I know. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So I'm glad that we're also talking about that. I worry because I don't want him to be the president, you know? So I'm glad he's bringing these issues up. I think it provides a really stark contrast to the rest of the Republican Party, and I'm glad they're not following him down this, rabbit hole. So it's not like this is going to affect the direction of the party.
It's really interesting because Rand Paul is doing a bang up job running for president in a general election.
Right.
That he
can't win the primary.
Far from winning, because if he keeps talking like this, he's sunk in a primary.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
no, and
I feel like he's putting the cart before the horse.
It's interesting.
It's so good that he's doing.
I think that more so than even running for president, this is. It's almost like he's playing a long game for the GOP to save themselves from themselves.
Well.
It's sort of like he's sort of saying those things so that someone can say them, basically. So that the GOP doesn't just become a roving group of, like, angry white men. Well, and it's an interesting strategy.
It's
got to be effective.
It's good. It's a good... I mean,
I would like them to enter reality again.
Well,
it would be helpful to everyone.
We'd be getting more done.
We would just be getting more done.
A lot of people...
As much as the GOP has never been my favorite people, I do feel like it's helpful to have two parties with, like, firm footings in reality.
Well, yeah.
Whether or not that reality is one that I want to live in is one thing, but, like, this is a part... Like, currently, his party is not even living in the same fact zone as the rest of us.
No.
So, it's nice that he's trying to pull them back in.
Yeah.
The process. He's trying something good.
Yeah.
He's doing it by saying the exact opposite of what he used to be saying. It's a little confusing to know where he stands on things.
That's the problem.
It's concerning that he used to be such an asshole.
I know.
So I worry about that because he really, he entered our sort of world on the Tea Party train.
Yeah, he came in on the 2010 sort of, Tea Party.
The man was a crazy, we called him Crazy Eyes for a long time for a reason.
Yeah, he still has those.
He still has the crazy eyes.
Yeah.
So, in any case, I'm curious to know where this is all headed.
Me too.
Certainly, he's currently sounding farther to the left than Hillary Clinton.
Headed straight to my heart.
Which is an interesting place for him to be.
Yeah.
Because she's starting to sound more like a hawk every moment.
Right. We posted a great quiz the other day.
One of the great quizzes in American history.
It won't tell you what, you know, classic literary character you most represent.
Right, which Jane Austen character you are. But
it does tell you that Hillary Clinton is the exact same
spitting image of John McCain.
John McCain.
Yeah, I took that quiz. Very hard quiz.
Yeah, it was a who said it, Hillary Clinton or John McCain quiz.
And it was alarming how difficult it was to answer.
You couldn't know. Yeah.
It turned out also that even if you answered wrong, a lot of the time it would just be like, no, John McCain said this in different words.
Right, it was the same.
This exact quote was from Hillary Clinton, but John McCain also said it.
Said the same thing.
It's a challenge. It's hard.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in hilarious domestic news, and we're finally getting to leave with some domestic news, which as much as I don't want to hear about all this going on in Ferguson, this is not good news.
Right.
I'm at least happy we're back on solid ground.
We didn't have to get to the bottom of what was going on with the Kurds and the Peshmerga.
God, it's been getting so complicated. We've been having to do so much research.
I know. We probably could have done a similar amount of research this week, but there's enough other things that we just sort of decided not to.
Yeah. We'll tell you what's going on in Iraq later,
kinda,
in a brief way.
Kinda.
Yeah. In any case, Rick Perry was indicted this week in a sort of surprise turn of events. I did not know this was happening.
No, I didn't either.
In Travis County, Texas, a hilarious thing happened. So, basically, Rick Perry had made threats to veto some appropriations to the DA's office in Travis County because he was trying to force the resignation of Rosemary Lemberg, who was the DA there, because she was arrested for drunk driving. And then also shown in a video, like, kicking the door of her cell and sticking her tongue out, and her blood alcohol level was, like, three times the legal limit. And these are all things that I say could probably only happen in Texas and maybe Louisiana. Although my dad was, I was talking about this with my dad, and I was both like, you know, this kind of shit probably happened. You know, Louisiana is filled with corruption charges. And he was like, but they're, like, funny. Like, Louisiana is, like, they go big or go home there in a way that this Texas bullshit is, like, not even attempting. Okay. Like, in Louisiana, corruption is, like, a way of life. This is sort of shocking because you don't hear about these kinds of corruption charges in Texas all that often.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, Perry ultimately ended up vetoing $7.5 million in appropriations to the division of that DA's office that is responsible for fighting official corruption,
right,
which is an interesting choice. an irony, if you will. Mm-hmm. In any case, so there was a complaint made by Texans for Public Justice, which is sort of like a left-leaning watchdog group, that alleged that his veto threat and, you know, to force a resignation constituted an abuse of power. So, and then we got an indictment stemming from that. The indictment came from a grand jury. It was not just middling nonsense.
Well, that's
indictment.
What he sort of like, you know, he responded to this and he was like, it's, you know, it's crazy and it's politically motivated. It may have started being politically motivated. I mean, it came from a left-leaning group, but he was indicted by a grand jury. It's not as if you don't get indicted for doing nothing.
For nothing.
I mean, that's not what happens.
A grand jury. Yeah. And, The indictment is on felony counts of abuse of official capacity, so that carries sort of like some harsh sentences.
Yeah, it could
if he gets
coercion of a public servant. I mean, it's over.
It could be in jail for life.
It could be five to life, which is like, wait, what?
All the years, any amount of years is possible in this situation.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a serious accusation.
Yeah.
And it's the first indictment against a sitting governor since 1917.
Yeah.
Which was also a Texas governor, James Pa Ferguson, mm-hmm. was indicted after he vetoed some state funding for the University of Texas, which was on political grounds. And he was impeached and then resigned before being convicted. And then his wife served some random terms after that, but not consecutive.
Ma Ferguson.
Pa and Ma Ferguson.
Yes.
In any case, Perry's term is over in January, and he's running for president after that. So this is sort of interesting timing.
Yeah.
And the Democrats obviously were like, resign!
Resign.
Like, he's not going to do that.
Not going to be.
Wendy Davis, interestingly, did not call for his resignation.
No.
She's one of the only Democrats that didn't. Because she's running for governor, not trying to be an idiot.
Right.
And obviously, that's just like some political bullshit. Like, he's not going to resign.
No,
like,
he's not going to resign.
We hope he doesn't resign, because I want to see how this plays out.
Speaking of her, it would be good if she can somehow tie whoever she's running against to him. Because I think he's in her. Isn't the guy that she's running against, like, isn't he the Texas, I don't know.
He's
in Perry's administration, I think, basically. But I got an email, actually, from either her or someone. The email situation is still
Oh, my God. It's still out of control.
Yeah. But I got an email, like, you'll never believe this poll. And it was, like, Wendy Davis is, like,
we get three of those a day.
She's like, within single digits now. She's down, like, 49-40.
Yeah.
Like, I'm, Wendy, bless your heart. But
don't send me that email.
Don't send me that email.
I live in California.
It's not happening for you.
Yeah. Sorry about it. It's wonderful that things are going better than expected.
We don't love you any less.
No.
But
we're not going to either. Stop. We're not going to donate to your campaign, though.
No.
And we don't care about your email updates.
Nope.
Because we're getting overwhelmed by Matt Burge's emails, and we just don't have time for all of this.
Don't know who he is.
Don't know who he is. He sends me like 7 emails a day that all from DCCC. DCCC.
Yeah.
It's too many C's in that one. I can't deal with them.
D-triple-C.
D-triple-C.
Yeah.
They're a bunch of jackwads at the moment. Who did I get one from? I got one from like some celebrity.
Kevin Spacey is like making some video for Bill Clinton's birthday or something like that, right? Isn't that what that one was?
Something like that.
It was nuts.
Ridiculous.
You took a screenshot of that and sent it to me, texted it to me, and I was like, I got it too.
Yeah, so, and I just said nope.
Yeah.
It was something. Yeah. In any case, another exciting GOP criminal news.
More exciting, really.
More exciting, probably. Really, yeah. The Rick Perry was bigger news this week, because this doesn't really have any special news this week, but we have some updates for you on the Bob McDonnell trial in Virginia.
We talked a lot about the charges that were brought against him, but, like, we haven't really talked about the trial at all. The charges were crazy, because it was, like, his wife had sort of, like, hooked up, maybe sexual.
I'm about to say some things that might blow your mind.
Yeah,
but with
some guy who was, like, makes Enatablock, which is like some pharmaceutical or something, and like they were maybe taking money from him and like doing all sorts of things, and like it's nuts.
It's
crazy.
Nuts.
We talked about it.
We
but
talked
the trial
about it.
Has
it's
had
getting
some gems.
Hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bob McDonald takes this in this week, so we're sort of curious to see where that goes. So far, though, there have been some hilarious moments. Maureen McDonald was accused of having a quote crush on Johnny Williams, who is the guy. He was the CEO of Star Scientific, who makes like this, you know, dietary supplement that they were being asked to promote in exchange for favors. And also they were like super broke, so they were taking loans from him.
Right.
After the 2011 earthquake, she sent Williams an email saying, "I just felt the earth move and I wasn't having sex."
It's genius.
That is the kind of thing that Maureen McDonald's up to.
Yeah.
Bob McDonald's daughter cried when she testified about her wedding, because it was alleged that it was catered by the businessman in question as a favor.
Yeah.
Prosecutors have cast McDonald's as deeply in debt, which they were, and that's why they needed all those loans from Johnny. But also, the defense has spent a lot of their time trying to basically prove that Maureen McDonald's kind of stupid. Like, that's their defense.
Yeah.
Their defense is that Bob is, like, in denial about her, like, limited mental capacity and didn't really know what was going on. And then, basically, they've tried to prove that she was really out of touch by saying, like, look, she tried to pitch this dietary supplement to Ann Romney.
Was she trying to cure her MS?
How much of an idiot do you have to be, guys? Like, that's their defense, basically. So the whole defense is like basically like don't try her. She's stupid. She doesn't know what she doesn't
stupidity
know.
Stupidity is not a defense.
Stupidity is not a defense.
Insanity is, but stupidity is not.
No, and a lot of this trial has basically been, you know, they can prove that Maureen McDonald was in too deep with this guy, Johnny Williams.
Yeah.
What they've been having a harder time showing is that Bob was involved and knew what was going on.
Shenanigans.
However, it seems like the prosecution has actually been having just like a stellar run of it, because legal observers have been saying that they could not have better, you know, shown the connection between Bob and these favors if they had tried it. And Johnny Williams is actually testifying because he's receiving immunity in exchange for testifying. And so his story held up really well under cross-examination, apparently. He just sort of, like, stuck to his guns and, like, was not fucking around. So they're facing 14 charges. Most of them are conspiracy charges, but there's also wire fraud charges and false statements and obstruction of justice by Maureen.
Yeah. But they also have, you know, they have pictures of Bob wearing like a Rolex that supposedly that they can prove that this guy bought for him. They have pictures of him driving his Ferrari, I think, right? So, I mean, the thing is,
they're being charged jointly. Or they're being tried jointly.
Yeah.
The court, they tried to not have that be the case. Yeah. They tried to get them have them tried separately, and the court said no. So there's a chance that, like, one of them gets convicted and the other doesn't, but it's kind of unlikely. And so if Maureen is going down and her best defense is like, "I'm stupid, sorry about it."
Right. That's
like,
not good
that's
for
not
Bob.
Good for Bob.
No.
So in any case, this is going to be an interesting week for the trial. Bob is taking the stand.
Yeah.
There have already been some pretty compelling allegations that he knew about the loans that Maureen was getting from Johnny Williams. And they're also, you know, they had been including this this dietary supplement on, like, you know, like at official dinners and stuff like that. They were putting it next to people's plates. So they were sort of promoting it while they were in an official capacity,
yeah.
which you are not allowed to do.
No.
These, interestingly, these are federal charges because the state doesn't really have any rules about this. You can do anything you want.
Which is crazy. There. I know.
They're being charged because this is illegal on the federal side.
Yeah.
But apparently anyone in Virginia can just be committing any sort of heinous
there's no laws about
ethics violations at any point.
Yeah,
how many
gifts public officials can get.
Like, really, guys?
That's nuts.
Are they just in it for the gifts?
I don't know.
You know they don't work full-time.
Yeah.
State governments, by the way, guys, like, don't work full-time. Like,
yeah.
This was information that we learned a couple years ago that was shocking to us. The California legislature does not work full-time. That is not a full-time job.
I know.
You know what else isn't? The New York State legislature.
Wild.
Like, guys...
Yeah, that's crazy.
They're making enough that we could just say it's a full-time job and move on with our lives.
Yeah.
But they shouldn't be able to have a second job.
No, I agree.
Not those guys.
No.
In any case.
Oh, this is a good one.
This is just more like a crime of stupidity. It's not really... We included it in our run of, like, dumb Republican crimes.
Right.
It's not the most crime.
It's not more important than some of the stories we're going to talk about after.
But we just thought we should mention it. This was on Thursday night during a Colorado... congressional debate.
Right. Mike Kaufman, who's a Republican, who's running for re-election, had some problems talking about women's health.
Well, he just couldn't remember the word birth control. So he
or contraception. He didn't know any of those words.
A weird sidetrack rant.
Yeah.
The moderator asks, what do you see as the differences between you and Andrew, his opponent, when it comes to women's reproductive rights and healthcare? His answer was, I'm pro-life.
Oh.
I'm proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
I do not support personhood, but I support a woman's access to, certainly to this Hobby Lobby decision to, and then the crowd shouts, birth control.
As laughter.
As laughing.
While laughing.
And he's like, birth control!
Yes. That's it.
Couldn't remember the word birth control.
Nope. Didn't
know
what it was.
Started just saying words.
Yeah.
Hobby Lobby. Just went on
I know.
With himself.
He supports a woman's access to Hobby Lobby.
Yes.
That's basically what he said.
Right.
Which
we don't.
We don't know. That's
not
wrong.
These days.
But anyway, nobody could figure out what exactly that meant, obviously, because it didn't mean anything. That was a very sort of like Sarah Palin. Like,
it's a Sarah Palin style answer, yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, so a spokesperson clarified, air quotes, clarified, after the debate that the candidate supports the Supreme Court's ruling, in terms of Hobby Lobby, but also supports maintaining women's access to contraception.
So he doesn't know what he supports. Those are diametrically opposed ideas.
I was
going to
say, you can't have both of those thoughts in your brain at the same time.
He's having none. He doesn't have any thoughts in his head, so fortunately he's not having this problem.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was really well clarified for all of us. The newest, like, Republican, like, talking out of both sides of your mouth, like, talking point.
At least he didn't say anything about rape.
No, it's true. He didn't mention the word rape. He didn't say legitimate or illegitimate.
No.
He just really kept his mouth
shut
on the...
won on that front.
He did. Yeah. This is one of the most restrained discussions of birth control that I've seen a Republican engage in recently. So I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why he was fumbling so much, because he was, like, trying to talk himself out of...
Right. He was like, no, I can't say rape. I can't say rape. I can't say rape. I can't say rape. So he was like, what is the word I can say? Just couldn't remember it.
No.
Didn't know which word that was. In any case, poor GOP.
Oh, boy.
Men
they just don't know.
They just don't know. And now, on to the Iraq updates you've been waiting for. We have one, which is that Nouri al-Maliki has resigned and has endorsed Haider al-Abadi.
Nicely done.
Thank you. We've been really worried about saying this name all afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And so we finally just wrote it out phonetically.
Yeah.
Haider al-Abadi is a member of the same party, the Dawa Party, but he is considered significantly more moderate than Maliki.
Right.
And they think that this is going to be a good step for Iraq because he, unlike Maliki, is probably going to be more likely to compromise with opposition parties. And that is,
that's the problem.
You need to do that.
Right.
Like, everyone hates everyone there.
That's,
so compromise is all they have.
That's how we've gotten to where we are.
Exactly.
Right now.
Yeah. Is Maliki just being, like, an asshole to everyone?
Yeah.
So in any case, for a while, people have been calling for him to step down for a while.
Yeah.
He's been kind of a dick this whole time about it.
Yeah, he didn't want to do it.
Didn't want to do it. Finally, I think his party basically forced him to do it. So, because he, like, this is the Shia party, and they sort of have been ruling with an iron fist and pissing off everyone else.
Yeah.
So, he's, al-Abadi is one of the many high-ranking officials who was at one point forced into exile by Saddam. He returned in 2003 after Saddam went bye-bye, but he hopefully is a good sort of step in the right direction.
Right.
apparently your political party there means nothing in terms of your political aims. It's just sort of like what religion you align with. So the fact that he is like doesn't really bear a lot of resemblances in terms of like platform to right. Maliki is sort of interesting.
Right, exactly.
But they basically were just sort of like, we need to get this guy out of here because he's an annoying guy.
Yeah.
So
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Also, in hilarious news of German people being hypocrites.
Yeah, do you remember how angry they were that we were spying on them? And, you know, listening to Angela Merkel's phone calls and all of those things?
Fortunately, they're spying on us too.
Yeah, well... Well, and we, the funny thing is that we suspected that this was happening.
Who isn't spying on who?
Well, that's what we said. Like, that's what we said. Yeah. As soon as, like, you know, we were like, everyone needs to settle down.
We talked
down
about because, this on like, this podcast.
Yeah, we did. Everyone is just probably spying on everyone else. And here's proof, because the Germans were pissed off. Yeah. But now it comes to find out that they were spying, they were listening to John Kerry's phone calls, they were listening to Hillary Clinton's phone calls. Accidentally, supposedly.
Yes, accidentally.
They say. Like, I mean, come
on. They were on, apparently, Hillary Clinton was making calls on the same frequency as a suspected terrorist or something. They're listening to her talking to Kofi Annan, by the way. Who that means Kofi Annan's calls are getting eavesdropped on by Germany. Like, this is, everyone is spying on everyone. We just need to admit that that's happening.
Yeah.
Like, we can't be indignant when the U.S. is spying on our phone calls when we know that part of our strategy is to spy on everyone, too.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Stop it.
Yeah.
If we're friends, then we just won't say anything mean to each other on the phone.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we just, if we're friends with Germany, we won't, it's not our sort of, it's not in our interest to assume they're not spying on us.
Right.
We'll just not say anything terrible about them when we're talking about them with other people. Like, that's how you know you're friends, is you spy on your friends and you find out that they're not talking about you behind your back.
Right.
That's, high school, if it taught me anything, it's that.
God.
Come on.
No. Yeah.
That's, you learned that all the way back in junior high.
Yeah.
Oh, God. We need to talk about something with you guys.
It's time to piss a lot of you off, potentially.
We don't care.
Or maybe not. We are not carers about this.
We're not
this.
Carers about this.
At all.
Do not challenge us to take up this fucking ice bucket challenge.
We're not doing it.
We're not doing it.
No.
I don't want to be nominated. Brent doesn't want to be nominated.
Nope.
If you nominate us, nothing will happen.
We're not doing it.
We'll not do
it. I will donate money to the ALS Foundation that we're supposed to be donating to.
Sure, sure.
We'll not do the ice bucket challenge.
No, not doing that.
And let me tell you why.
Please do.
First off, it has been rightly noted, if you are doing this in California and you're not using recycled dirty dishwater, then you're being irresponsible.
That's right.
For one.
We're in a drought, guys.
We're in a giant
drought.
Don't
pour water over your head for no reason.
And I'm not, like, I think a lot of, some people have been sort of, I think, sort of, like, laughingly saying that. Sort of like, haha, we're in a drought. Like, that's, you shouldn't be, but, like, that's real.
Don't be doing that.
Like, don't be wasting water.
Don't pour water over your head for no reason in a drought.
Second, it's just, it's one of those things, to me, that I just think, and there's been things written about this, too, that it is one of those things where, like, people do, and they think that it then gives them sort of, like, a right to...
not care about anything else.
To not care about anything else. Like, if this is not done as sort of, like, a broader, you know, thing that you are doing in your life to, like, do good to people, then there have been a lot of studies done where, like, when someone does, like, one good deed like this, it sort of, like, you know, gives them the right in their head to then carry on being assholes.
Yeah.
And I think that's happening. I'm sure, probably. I don't have personal proof of this, other than knowing that a lot of people who I've seen on my Facebook feed who are doing this are assholes.
Exactly.
If you're not an asshole, then disregard that.
Right.
But I mean, it's...
But if you are, check yourself.
It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't have a problem with people doing it, necessarily, in the sense that, like, it's doing good. But it's just sort of, like, an annoying, ridiculous thing that I feel like people are doing so they can have, like, a video that people are looking at online.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing, is one of the thing, you know, we maintain social media presences because we like to keep up with our friends and we like to promote our podcast.
Right.
I don't like to post tremendously personal stuff on Facebook, and I certainly don't want to be challenged to post a video of myself.
There's
on
a
Facebook.
Very like self-congratulatory aspect to this, which I don't like.
Exactly, it's just not for me. If you're a celebrity, it's a great way to get PR.
Right.
More power
to
you.
That's the thing that I have. If there's one thing that I have liked about this whole thing, it's seeing like Bill Gates nominating Ryan Seacrest to do this.
There's one thing that makes me furious about this whole thing. It's seeing people like Bill Gates nominating Ryan Seacrest.
I
have
like
a long-standing issue with celebrities of different genres knowing each other. I don't like it. I don't like imagining that like Tom Cruise and like Ashley Olsen are like hugging each other when they see each other on the street, but it's probably happening somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't like when these random celebrity connections come to my attention.
I like that. fascinates me.
I mean, it's fascinating, but it's disturbing. It makes it feel like the world is being run by a cabal of, like, kind of dumb entertainers and, like, really rich people.
Oh, it totally does.
And it is. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Conspiracy theory. But it's true. What are we going to do? Yeah. If Bill Gates and Ryan Seacrest are in it together, we're all fucked.
I agree.
So, in any case... But don't challenge me to do this. I'm not going to post a video of myself and pouring water over my
head. We don't want to have to be assholes online to people who are doing it.
No. Like,
just leave us out of it.
Just leave us out of it. If you have a friend that you suspect is not someone who's trying to post videos of themselves on the internet, if you have friends who are kind of hams, let them do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Hams are loving this.
Yeah, big time.
People who love performing are having the time of their lives here.
Yeah.
They finally get a chance to post a video of themselves being dramatic on the internet. They love that shit.
Yeah.
You know who doesn't love that shit? Me.
Us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me and Brent. In... dramatic, exciting...
Oh my gosh.
...shake-up news.
I know. David Gregory.
Man-child syndrome 101.
Has been rumored recently to be out at Meet the Press, and this week,
he's just
out. He's gone. Last week was his last week. I turned on Meet the Press this morning. It was Andrea Mitchell, and at the end of the episode, she was like, oh, by the way, P.S., last week was David Gregory's last week. It's like... Wait, what? Yeah. He doesn't even get to go on the air and...
Like, say his goodbyes.
Say his goodbyes and say thank you. He's just gone.
They were
gone.
Just sick of him.
He's done. He's gone.
I'm sick of him, too.
I am, too. He's not... Well, Galen and I, my roommate, have been talking for a long time about switching to a different morning show. Yeah. But we've just sort of, like, been too lazy to set a weekly DVR pass to one of the other shows and cancel the Meet the Press one. But he's not good.
No. He's not good. He has man-child syndrome. There's so many things.
The ratings have been terrible, so it's like... You know, good riddance.
Good riddance.
You know, supposedly he got paid $4 million to leave quietly.
Yeah, well, his contract wasn't up till next year.
That's what Page Six says anyway. But apparently he's being linked to a potential crossfire
with
CNN
Newt
thing
Gingrich.
With Newt Gingrich.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Lord.
So that's too
and,
bad.
And Chuck Todd is taking over.
Yeah, which I like.
Yeah, Brent has often said that Chuck Todd would be a better host.
I love Chuck Todd.
And it turns out that they knew that.
Yeah, I find it a little interesting that, you know, Andrea Mitchell was hosting this morning. There were a lot of people this week sort of, like, calling for, ever since it was rumored that he was going to go away, calling for a woman host for one of those morning shows.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And they have a lot of women who fill in for him. You know, she fills in for him a lot of times. Savannah Guthrie, who I actually really love, fills in for him a while. Andrea Mitchell, I sort of like a fine, like,
she's a person.
You know, if you're going to watch a morning show and she's there for 1 week when somebody's on vacation, then that's like an acceptable thing to do.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, she's not.
It's not a hero to people.
No, she's not at all. But anyway, I was sort of surprised that they didn't maybe go that route. Although I love Chuck Todd, so I'm not angry about it. I'm not gonna.
I never watch Meet the Press. Couldn't care less. But
I know.
I feel excited about David Gregory's upset.
Yeah.
He's been annoying me for a long time.
I know he has.
In any case, an interesting thing is happening at the LA City Council right now.
Yeah.
So in the last municipal elections, like, basically no people voted.
Zero.
Here are some reasons why, by the way, guys. They put them on a weird day, and they have dumb jungle primary systems here where nobody knows what they're voting for, and basically the general is the primary, and so no one knows it's happening, and it's a disaster. In any case, the last time that we voted here, less than a fourth of registered voters turned.
Yeah, like 22%.
Less than a fourth of registered voters. That's not even qualified, you know, potential voters. That's
likely voters.
Registered voters already make up a depressingly slim margin of the voting age populace.
Right.
So less than a fourth of those registered showed up to vote. So the city has been trying to figure out what to do about this. And on Thursday, the Los Angeles Ethics Commission recommended a kind of interesting idea.
Yeah.
Which was basically to have cash prizes to lure people to the polls.
Yeah, a lottery. A voting lottery.
A voting lottery.
For a lot of damn money.
A lot. I was surprised. When I saw this, I was like, oh, like $100? Yeah, I'll vote for that. No, they're talking like $25,000, $50,000.
Yeah, like a real actual lottery.
A real lottery.
Yeah.
This was sort of one of the most out-of-the-box suggestions that I think anyone, you know...
But they're going to look at
it. But they're going to look into it, and they might even start a pilot program. Part of it is that, there was a commission formed by the mayor and by the head of the president of the city council, Herb Wesson, that recommended that we change our elections from odd number to even number years so that we can sort of, like, hit the, like, you know, federal elections in the same round and whatever. And, like, that was going to be a lot of money and, like, a big headache, and it was going to take years to institute. And so I am interested in finding an idea that takes months to institute, not years. And that is, I think, what is interesting about this idea.
Yeah. Well, they're talking about, like, this pilot program could be, you know,
they could do it
start
anytime.
Next year, like in the next election.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It may require a ballot measure, which is, like, the most annoying thing in the world because...
Well, we love one of those.
Ugh, proposition nonsense.
People would vote for that.
But I think people would vote for that. I would hope. It's just free money for voting. Like, what? Why not?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, just in my head, if maybe it makes more sense to do smaller amounts for more people.
Maybe.
Like, what if we all just got paid $100 to go vote? It's fine with me.
Yeah.
I'll take $100 to go vote. Like, that would be enough to make me go vote. I don't need $50,000
to do it. You would go vote anyway.
I would go, that's true.
You're voting for free.
I'm voting for free right now.
But you'd take the $100.
But I would take the $100.
Yeah, of course.
If I were thinking, nah, maybe I won't vote, the effort would be worth it for the $100. Yeah. Like, I don't need $25,000 to convince me that voting is important.
No.
But I guess a lot of people do.
Yeah.
In any case, this is, you can't pay people to vote for certain people. But we think that it's legal to pay people just to vote, to show up at the voting booth. You're not even, you don't even have to cast a vote once you're in there. You just have to be there.
As a candidate, you can't pay somebody to go vote.
Right. But the city can pay anyone they want to just show up at a voting booth and vote for whoever they want.
Yeah.
So, in any case, this is sort of an interesting idea that we fully support.
It'd be really exciting.
I
would love to win $50,000
I know,
voting.
Just for voting, a thing that I do anyway,
it
would be great.
Yeah.
And it would be easier for me to convince my office mates to go vote if I could be like, you could win $50,000.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good reason.
People would be into that. I think that's it would work.
I feel like we've needed a creative solution to this problem. I was railing about this when I did jury duty last week or a couple weeks ago, when I was like, you know, it's really annoying to me that they can make me give up a full day of my time to go do jury duty, and they can force me to do that. They can compel me to do that by law. But they can't compel me to vote by law. So they can't force me to do something in my own interest by law. Only something annoying.
Right.
I feel like if you have to do jury duty, you should have to vote.
Yeah.
I know that people may not agree with that. You shouldn't have to cast a vote once you have shown up to vote, but you should have to show up. You should have to go into the voting booth. If you want to vote for yourself for every election, that's fine. You can do that. But you should have to cast a vote. It is your civic duty to do that. Yeah. It is in the interest of your fellow citizens that you do that. It is not fair to me and Brent that, you know, 75% of you are not showing up to the polls because it means our city is not being fairly represented.
Yeah, and I absolutely think this would work. I don't have any numbers to back this up.
Nope, just based on
my guess is that the
truthiness
people who are not voting are a similar group to the people
who are playing
the lottery.
Correct.
We think that's probably accurate.
I think
accurate,
that's probably
right?
pretty
I
accurate.
Have
based
no,
on nothing.
I have no stats.
Just based on
that's a hunch.
Just based on. Yeah, gut feelings.
Uh-huh.
I think that this is... I'm willing to literally try anything.
Sure.
It is important that people vote. If we want to pay people $50,000 in a lottery to do that, I'm for it.
Yeah.
If you want to tow people's cars to voting booths just to make them get there, like, I'm for that. I'm for anything. I'm for anything that gets people to vote. Because I think it's important, and we mysteriously don't do it here.
Yeah, I get it.
So I'm excited that they're tackling this issue. I'm excited that they're coming up with creative solutions. I'm glad that they're thinking to themselves, you know what, let's not do something that takes a decade.
Yeah.
Let's do something that we can do in a matter of months.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
What's not exciting is that you might be in a plane crash with a pilot who doesn't have arms. This is a real thing that happened. The Belfast City Airport had some gusty conditions. When a 46-year-old pilot was landing his Dash 8 plane, and his lower left arm prosthetic detached, and then he was forced to land one-armed.
I can only laugh. I've just been
this is
trying
ridiculous.
To silently giggle while I was been saying this, and it's not funny at all. Thankfully, the plane didn't crash. No one was hurt.
Right.
He was able to land it with his other arm.
But here's a question. Can we maybe just have pilots of commercial airlines...
Yeah, with arms.
With two arms.
I agree.
I know we don't like to discriminate.
No, that's what I was going to say. Like, I want this person should be employed somewhere, and he should have a great job. And
if he wants to fly planes in his spare time when it's not putting anyone in danger, then let him.
Yeah, but, I mean, if gusty conditions, which are happening a lot when you're flying in the
air... When you're there,
are causing your limbs to fall off,
like,
that's not what you're looking for in a pilot.
That's a time to consider a different career path.
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ. As if things aren't scary enough on an airplane.
I know. Airplanes are disappearing into thin... Airplanes are going to heaven right now.
We like, literally anything that is potentially fictional that could be happening on airplanes is happening. And this is a real fact-based story about a man who just, like, his arm detached while he was flying, landing a plane. I don't even know what to take away from this story.
I don't either.
Other than that airplanes are terrifying. But this is a sign. And on airplanes, here's the thing. In a car, you might be able to find out if the person driving the car is missing a limb.
Right, that's a passenger.
You're there with them. You don't know what you're up against there.
No.
Is a monkey flying the plane? I don't know. Like, Is a robot flying the plane? I have no way of finding out without being
okay with that.
Without being accused of being a terrorist. Well, a robot is flying the plane, first of all. Planes are robots, and they're flying themselves. But I still like to feel like someone could take the reins if the robot is sort of out of his depth.
Yeah, you want that person to have arms.
You want that person to have arms. It is a major part of flying a plane. In any case.
Oh, boy.
So that's out there happening, as if things weren't bad enough, as if you weren't definitely going to get Ebola tomorrow. You now might have a pilot who has no arms. God's sakes, people.
Oh, boy.
In any case, that's the news this week.
Yeah.
We will see you next week.
Yes.
With more news.
More news.
Like we do.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.